Welcome to Perfectly Framed Podcast. I'm Nate Markham. With me tonight is a very special guest. Unfortunately, Aaron Pags is not here. I will be flying solo, but you know, I mean, I've taken on bigger tasks. This is obviously it's March 4th, 2021. This is episode 38 for the fantasyandframes.com fantasy podcast. With me tonight, taking, I would say, filling the shoes for Aaron. They're big shoes to fill, but this man here has, in my opinion, in 1 year, as they say, what the Grinch's heart grew four times that day. His fantasy acumen, his credibility, which should never have been questioned at all, has grown exponentially. He is the 2020 NFBC Draft Champions overall winner. He is the winner of the lucky, I'm going to say lucky because I feel like that Steve Garvey baseball that you won.
Woo-hoo.
Then, of course, I hear that you won 45 other prizes too, so it kind of takes away from some of that. But whatever, I'm going to take the credit when I can. He's my opponent, my arch enemy now in the tag team tournament that we have going on. He is the – are you in the Sweet 16 right now of the pod brackets, I believe?
Sweet 16 of the pod, yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh. And if you're listening, you know that beautiful, beautiful voice as none other than Rob DiPietro. Rob, it's a pleasure to finally talk to you, my friend. How you doing?
Absolutely, Nate. It's a pleasure to be here talking to you. I'm doing great. We just had a nice pre-pod conversation, and that's what it's about, you know. Nate, I think you were a big part of this run, you know, winning this Steve Garvey autograph ball right here.
Uh-huh.
Here we go. That was a big kickoff to my content career. You know, I was just getting involved with watching all the Potapalooza and PitchCon, and just getting involved with trying to get to know everybody. And won your autograph ball, and ever since then, and it's just been nothing but upwards. So there's something magical in this guy right here. That's why he's on my desk right there. But I feel honored to come on and talk to you and meet you in person, and hopefully in real person soon.
God, that would be the best thing ever. I'd say it's all of the accolades aside, obviously getting to know you and becoming friends is probably one of the most valuable things that I can take out of that, because you were one of the first people to even reach out. We just started our podcast last year. And right. Last year, as many of listeners may know, was not about relief pitching only. Last year we were sane. This year we are a little bit crazy taking on this endeavor of bullpens only, but we wanted to switch it up. And, you know, and going back to last year, you reached out and said you listened. And I was like, wow, people actually listen. It's nice to have people tell you. You just sometimes assume you're talking to nobody, but you're not.
That's an amazing feeling, right? Oh, man. And that's why every little interaction I have with anybody who reaches out and says, hey, you know, this episode really helped me on my draft. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And yeah, like you said, like at first you don't think anyone's listening. And when you see, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, you kind of like look at your listens, you know, wherever you do your show. So I'm looking on Anchor and I'm like, ooh, you know, when I first thought 31, like 31, right. 31 people actually wanted to hear my voice. So that's kind of cool. It was probably all had to do with Yancey. He had a big hand in that when I started. But yeah, it's pretty fascinating. And it's pretty great what you feel inside when you know that you're making a difference, you know, mm-hmm. to other people. It just gives you a great motivation to keep going and and just keep getting better, you know. So yeah, so I know we unfortunately have to face each other in the first round of the podcast bracket that Baseball Pods Chris is hosting again for the second year. And it sucked. And it's like, man, all this stuff is happening. We were scheduled to do a pod. I ran into some stuff. We couldn't do it. But I'm like, then I got to face them. Then I got to do a draft against them. I'm like, oh, my God, what's happening right now?
the Cosmos do not want us to be best friends. They want us to be enemies. But I got news for you, Cosmos. It's not going to work. I would have voted for you against us, my friend, because I can tell you – I listen to every show. Actually, I guess we should tell everybody, listen, if you're listening to this and you don't listen to the Pull Hitter podcast, I'd say tell you to stop, but please keep listening and then stop and then go over and listen to your show. I mean, just the amount of guests that you have, the amount of winnings of fantasy baseball total, I couldn't even begin to imagine how much that even amounts to.
Yeah, it's a lot. Those guys, those last four guests are basically been printing money from and from the Federal Reserve and the NFBC. It's pretty fascinating. But you know what? It's awesome too that they're willing to come on and share the time, and I just enjoy learning about the history because I'm new to the NFBC. So I enjoy just hearing how it started, how people got involved and their stories. And, you know, it's pretty cool. Like, it's, there's within the fantasy baseball, you know, sphere, there's like a whole bunch of other little, you know, spheres, and we're all like kind of, you know, bouncing around. A lot of us have a hand in all of them or some of them or maybe none of them, but it's awesome because even some of every episode for me is special, no matter if it's the first podcast. You know, I had a couple of guests on, it was their first ever podcast, and the feeling I had after that was just like awesome, you know, especially because they got great positive feedback on it, and that gave them the motivation to, you know, to feel like, and that's just from, you know, right, watching other people do it, you know, right, Nate, like you see guys like Bubba who just bring people on and get them out. He like, you know, he likes them. He reaches out to you and, you know, he's been very, very, crucial in my, you know, content, you know, world so far. Cause Bubba has always been so like inspirational and like, you know, we're not like us men are not good at patting each other on the back. Right. So when, so when you see it and when you hear it and, you know, and you give it back, it feels great. And so, yeah, just trying to take that note of, you know, I want to get better at the NFBC, and I also want to give people a platform to get out there and speak about, you know, things that they, love to speak about. And it's great to, there's so many minds, right? There's so many minds out there to get involved inside their brain. That's what I love to do. Like, I connect with people on a deep level, like kind of like how we did, you know, right from the start, because it's important, you know. You only get one shot at this life.
Yes. And, well, you know, and you should give yourself a lot of credit. And the one thing that you do extremely well for the guests, in my opinion, is you make them feel like they're just having a conversation, because really, that's all we're doing. We're doing a podcast, for crying out loud. This isn't anything. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's nothing special. But at the same time, it's special to me. It's special to you. It's special to everybody in our sphere, in our circle, which, mind you, like you mentioned a ton of names, and we could go on and on. But I think this fantasy baseball circle is one of the most humble, genuine, and just, you know, giving communities you can find. And if you're listening to this and you want to get into podcasting or you want to get into writing and you're scared, just reach out. You'll find 1,000 different people willing to give you more than anybody's probably ever thought of getting in return for nothing. And I mean, you'll get motivation. You'll get in. It's a great community. And if there's one thing that I know our show, besides knowledge, hopefully, and fun, is the knowledge and the foresight for people to say, okay, you know what, if they can do it and they have fun and they're welcoming, maybe I can give it a shot. And it gives you a platform and gives you an opportunity to meet, you know, great people like yourself and like others.
Right. Especially like I was grateful. I got hurt at work, but my wife, like two weeks after that, I was home for the first 2 weeks, you know, hey, Kay, I found this microphone. Why don't you start learning, you know, what it takes to do a podcast? And I'm like, really? She's like, well, you listen to all these podcasts, you know, why can't you do it? And I'm like, I can't do it. I'm, you know, no way. Like, not me, you know, that's what your original thought is. And then you're like, well, I'm going to have some time in my hand, you know, and start like checking out what it makes to do a good podcast, to listen to some podcasts about what it takes to do a good podcast. Oh, all right. So, you know, it's just like, and then like, oh, but now I need a name, you know, and you start writing down names, and it's just like, For me, it was crazy. I had like 2 or 3 days. It was like where it was just writing down stuff, baseball related. And then I was like, was it available on Twitter? Is it available on the website? Is it available as, you know, as a podcast name? And it, you know, it had to be all three. And, you know, just checked, you know, just went through that whole process. And it's overwhelming because you feel like you want to just get your first episode out in a week, you know, but it doesn't, that doesn't happen. But it's extremely, extremely gratifying when you get to that point where you're able to do it, mm-hmm. you know? And I remember like that point, it took me to just say my first words in front of the mic. I felt like I was going to get there so quick. And then when I got there, it felt like it was the longest journey, you know, right? But yeah. It was like, oh, now finally it's just a, but then it was like, oh man, now I have to learn how to edit this thing. And that's another project, but you know, like we said, just you chip away at it, you get better at it, and then you start getting great feedback. And before you know, you're like, hey, I'm doing a podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because me and my wife were recently shopping for a new sofa set. And I was sitting down at this like desk looking thing and with like a fancy leather round chair. And I sat down and this guy randomly goes, "You look like a broadcaster." I'm like, "Well, I have a podcast." And he's like, "You have a podcast?" And I was like, "Yeah, why?" He's like, "Oh, because I never met anyone who had a podcast before." And I was taken aback. Like, I was like, "Yeah, it's really no big deal, you know?" And I walked away. My wife's like, "It is a big deal." Like, he was happy, you know? And I'm like, "Yeah, that's mm-hmm. true." It's like, and you don't even realize. I'm like, "Well, actually, that's a good point because I never met anyone who had a podcast."
I didn't either.
Right.
now we both have podcasts. You have one thing that I will say I'm envious of, not green with envy, but in excited and happy for you, is your article on the Forecaster and your name on the back of it. I mean, I've been reading the Forecaster since it basically right. came out. That's been my Bible that nobody
It's amazing, there it is. Right?
There's you, my friend. And it's awesome. I'm so excited every time I see it. And if you know, on the Fantasy Black Book, if you haven't got ordered either of these two books right now, go to Amazon immediately, go to Baseball HQ, get both of them. Aaron Pags, the co-host with me, was a contributor for Joe Piscopia's Black Book. And so on the back of that is the Perfectly Framed. Granted, it's probably more for Aaron than for me. But at the same time, you know what? I'm going to take the credit and I'm going to say, hey, I got my name on the back of that one. Now, hopefully next year is the a baseball forecaster because right. I take all of your amazing knowledge. But one of the things that we had talked about is, you know, separating, having a niche a little bit. And one of the things that we've done here is we've went back into history. And I think I know I can for yourself and me and for many of us, baseball history is key to really, really the love of fantasy baseball stemmed from something. And you right. ask all your guests how you got into it and everything else. And I know after our conversations that baseball going to the games has got us excited. Now, we can't go back to 1938. And what we do is we go year based off of episode number. This is episode 38. So you've looked back at 1938. And you have found a specific pitcher with maybe some story history that you might like to tell the listeners.
Yeah. So, man, Nate, looking at these guys' stats from 1938 is pretty wild. Yeah. I mean, I was looking at the K percentage, and I was like, "There's nobody above 20% except for you know Bob Feller." Actually, like the obvious guys, you know, that we know, and then. So many of the most winningest pitchers and the guys with the best ratios had walk percentages high, strikeout percentages. It's so crazy. But yeah, I found this guy, Mace Brown, in his age 29 year season, he had 51 games. He led the season led the league in games. He started two of them, but he mostly came out of relief, 15-9 he was, and he threw 130 innings. And I was like, wow, sticking in my head, you know, your ratios stink, man. Like 9.4 K percentage, 7.5 walk percentage. But I was thinking in my head, I was like, man, I can get like 130 innings out of a reliever these days. It's just like basically a weak starter, right? Exactly. It's so random. So So Mace Brown. Let's see. One thing I know about him is he was going to Iowa and he actually accepted money to play in a summer league. So it got, he forfeited the damage status and he became ineligible. And it's so funny, right? Because you put yourself in these kids' shoes, like where who knows how much he was getting paid, but it was definitely enough where he was like, yeah, like I want money. I'm a college kid. Like I want some money. Right. So, so he ended up not going back to college, but he did make it to the Pirates. And in that magical 1938 season, he led them with 15 wins. And then I was reading about how, they awarded saves like retroactively, they kind of figured it out. So he had 5 saves. So it wasn't like ideal relief guy per se, but made it to the All-Star game, ninth in the league in All-Star voting. And then what happened to him was, I don't know if you're familiar with Gabby Hartnett.
The name sounds familiar. Why?
Yes. So the name sounds familiar because Gabby Hartnett hit a famous home run in the 1938 playoff that ultimately propelled the Cubs to the World Series, and the Pirates didn't get there because in this game that Mace Brown was pitching, the umps had a little congregation and they said, all right, it's getting really dark out.
Oh, yeah.
This game is only going to go to 9 innings. So good old Mace Brown was facing Gabby Hartnett. And now it was a pretty intense September, too. The Cubs and the Pirates played all the way. They're battling each other out. So now it comes to battle out until all the way through the ninth, deadlocked in a game at 5-5. Right? So the umpires say, we're playing 9, regardless of the score, and we could assume play the next day. Well, so Mace Brown hit Gabby Hartnett with 2 curve strikes, and he says, quote unquote, I got him strike 1, then a foul ball for strike 2, both curves. He says, when he was swinging at them, he just looked like a schoolboy, and I said to myself, I'll just throw him a better one and strike him out. He said, well, I made a lousy pitch and he hit into the left center field stands. He goes, and I always wondered, he couldn't hit it. He couldn't see the ball. So I always wondered if he actually swung at the sound of the ball. And so that's his, like, the most popular thing that happened to Mace Brown in his career. And it happened to be something that wasn't so special for him, at least. But then it was pretty cool. He had a life in baseball. He stayed in baseball. It was funny as I read that so by the time he retired, his annual salary in about 1946 approached about $12,000 a year. I'm like, wow, but back then that was probably awesome, like just amazing money, especially to play baseball. So, and then he stayed in as a scout. He coached and he was actually responsible. His other claim to fame, which he was actually responsible for scouting Jim Rice. So that's my story about Mace Brown. And one quick thing, Nate, the names, aren't the names something else?
The best.
Jumbo. Absolutely the best. Mace, it's just like the a lot. Tot, whose name was Tot?
More than one, like a lot. That was a pop. There was, somehow these are popular names. Slick. Mule and Slick and Jumbo and Jimbo, and I mean it's we found
Nels.
Nels. The nicknames, fantastic. The lack of appendages, the fingers missing from these pitchers over the years. We've documented at least 7 different pitchers that are missing fingers. Wow. No joke. And yet some of them are some of the best pitchers ever. They think that it was like a precursor to pitch movement. Like they actually had like the, I hate to say the nub on a seam. And when they released the ball, it actually generated more curve and more movement. So they were kind of, unbeknownst to them, kind of getting better action because they were missing fingers.
And I kind of, you know what, that's interesting too, because I'm trying to visualize how you would compensate, right, without a finger. And so maybe you would try different, like stretch out this finger. Hold on, let me get this finger here. That's interesting.
The Vulcan curve started because someone didn't have a ring finger or something.
Yeah, probably. Yes. Someone lost it in a meat grinder in their off-season job.
Unfortunately for 1938, the person who I kind of want to bring up is, it's sad because he's probably known for the most unknown as well, the most inaccurate or untrue thing. And this is Charlie Root. I don't know if you know who Charlie Root is. You've probably heard the name. If you haven't, you know who he is without knowing who he is. Yeah. He was really, if you go back, he was what they consider he was the man's man in baseball back then. They said he was just mean and gruff, and he was John Wayne in baseball dress. He once is quoted as saying that sore arms are for mollycoddles, and I ain't no molly, so I ain't going to leave the game with a sore arm. So that's, you know, he pitched. I don't know what a mollycoddle is, but I'm sure it's something saying he's not a sissy or something, whatever terms they use. But he, if you look at his career, over 17 years, he had 200 wins, a 3.59 ERA, 1.295 WHIP, 3,137 innings, and about 1,400 strikeouts. As you said, the K percentage and everything was pretty bad. We look back at 19. Ellen Adair was on with us, and I believe it was 1930 or 29. There was one person in baseball that had a K minus walk rate in the positives. One person in baseball. Everybody else was negative. That's unfathomable. Can you imagine that?
The umpires didn't know what a strike was.
Exactly. It was just let him hit. And it's funny, you went and you even talked about, it's one thing that we haven't really done too much, and I'm surprised that we haven't looked at the fantasy aspect of some of these relief pitchers, because in 1939, he went from, Charlie Root was a starter and a really a damn good one too, if you look at his numbers I just read off. But in 1939, he had he was 8-7. With a 2.56 ERA, 160 innings pitched, 9 saves, 70 strikeouts. But look at that, as if you had him as a reliever and you scooped up 8 wins, 9 saves, a mid 2 ERA, you know, you got 160 innings, good ratios, no strikeouts, but you could do worse. He's somebody that would have been rostered, but when he passed away, his daughter, sprinkled his ashes and read the quote that he says, "It's a shame that my life is known for something that was untrue." And it says the one thing that was untrue is he's the pitcher that surrendered the famous or infamous called shot by Babe Ruth.
Oh, wow.
He still goes to the grave and said it never happened. He said, if there are many, many teammates of his said, I know Charlie, if Babe had called his shot in front of him, they said he would have been knocked on his keister every other time he ever saw him, and he would have been hit in the helmet that next at bat or the next time they face each other.
I'm looking at his picture. He definitely looks like he would have hurt somebody. Exactly. He looks like a young Tommy Lee Jones.
Hey, maybe Tommy Lee Jones should do the Charlie Root story.
You know what? Yeah, the untrue story about Charlie Root. Or maybe exactly. We'll just make it, Nate. We just made it.
Perfect. Done. All right.
We'll start getting into making movies. Right, podcasts, exactly. Baseball movies, we'll do it all.
Remember where we started off, Rob? We were just doing podcasts, and now we're famous celebrities. I don't know if I have the face. I have a face for a streamless podcast, but maybe not quite so much for movies, but whatever. It is what it is. So
stop it.
Let's get into some spring training news and notes. There's not a ton. It's you know, in spring training, relief pitching only is by far the most difficult thing to figure out, because there's no coach speak as much. There's not as much yet, and there's a little bit of usage. But let's start off with your team, the Mets. I Seth Lugo came out today and said he's on track to return. So about 6 weeks from now, probably May, June. Looking good, and after it looked like Dellin Betances kind of got knocked around a little bit today. Good news for you to get Seth Lugo back in that bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I he's a great pitcher all around, and he's a team guy. He's, I mean, obviously, he's, hey, we want you to maybe close, or maybe we want you to start, and you know, right. he you know, he's definitely a team guy in that lens. I'm pretty confident that the Mets bullpen is just one ad away from, and I think it's going to be a midseason move. You know, I think it's going to be a midseason ad where they can, you know, just add another piece to that bullpen. Because I think Betances is, he is a key guy right now, because if he can just get a little bit close to where his Yankee days were, and not like, he doesn't have to be that lights out 100K guy anymore, but he just has to be effective in his innings. You know, I would have liked to see one more ad, but hopefully one of their younger arms can, you know, maybe pop into the bullpen for a little bit, and Zelman could actually, I don't know, provide something useful this year. But he's not a threat to Diaz in my eyes. I don't think anyone is.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, he's, you know, I think it's something that's been a tad bit overblown, his whole, given his whole context. I mean, he was so good at the end of the last year that that Lugo did go start, you know, so, and people tend to, like, you know, are kind of omitting that a little bit, that it's at some point it didn't, you know, he was like, oh yeah, well, he's our guy again. So yeah, I mean, it has happened to Diaz in the past where he's, you know, lost it and he got benched, but in this save environment right now, his skills wise, he's right there with, you know, with Hendrick and, and Hader, you know, maybe even better in some aspects. But yeah, so hopefully Lugo doesn't, you know, come back too soon and mess up his chance to help us down the rest of the season. But yeah, I'm excited to have him back because he's a gamer and he's a team guy.
Nice. Yeah. I'd say a scenario that is pretty solid. I think Edwin Diaz is going to have as long a leash of anybody in baseball. And even, I think last year was a little bit fluky in terms of the home runs and everything else. But at the end of the day, he's obviously the guy in Chicago, not the White Sox, but the Cubs. Yeah. I've been a fan of where Craig Kimbrell's been going recently, and well, even from early on, just because I think that September last year showed vintage Craig Kimbrell and what I expect out of him. And the biggest concern going into the season was people thought maybe Rowan Wick might be the guy to unseat him. And Rowan Wick hasn't recovered from that intercostal oblique injury that since September 16th of last year, he hasn't pitched past. So, right. I mean, he's still unlikely to be ready for opening day, they reported today. I think that the more he's out, Dwayne Underwood Jr. has been outright released. So he was another concern people were thinking about, you know. But I don't know what your take on Kimbrell is. I don't know if you have shares of him yet. I think that by season's end, we're going to look back, as long as they don't trade him, because the Cubs have been, you know, they're talking about maybe doing stuff with their team. Who knows? I think he might be a value, and we're not supposed to use the word value, right? That's not right. We're supposed to say he could have good return on his investment, I guess.
Yeah, but that took too long, right? That's why people just say value.
Exactly. I know. ROI. 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 He has good ROI.
Oh, man. You know what? I don't have any of him, and it's probably, you know, might bite me in the butt, and maybe I might have to consider it, you know, and maybe in the main event season, or I think
I'm taking him because I said Craig Kimbrell and ruin, you know.
No, I'm just saying, considering, you know, the closer landscape, and you know, it's just, he's been at a spot when I've been doing my DCs where I'm not going with a closer, and so I've never really landed in, he's never really landed in my path to draft him. And I go into saved on a DC either really early, like once, and then just wait really late to just pound the next best arms. Or if I tap in like in the first 15 rounds, first 16 rounds, I was going for guys like Holland and Jordan Hicks. And now it's definitely Jordan Hicks for me in that area. So yeah, but Kimbrell, you know, I think you hit it right on the head. There's just Wick's not ready. Underwood was another threat, and he's, I don't know, you know, I think he's going to be able to take his lumps, but I don't know if that affects you mentally when you're like, there's no one who could threaten me. I wonder if you like kind of dial it down a little bit. So I hope he doesn't feel that way.
That's good. That's a good point.
I hope you're not listening, Craig Kimball, but I don't know. I'm just thinking in my head. I try to get into an athlete's head, but competition, you know, like that's where it's like, oh, this rookie quarterback, you know, it's a different sport too, but let's bring in this veteran to quote unquote push him. So I don't know what they're doing. I guess they don't want anyone to be pushed on that team.
No. Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. Some people are scared of Ryan Pressly because they say that he doesn't have the closer mentality. He doesn't. I don't know if he wants to be. I don't believe that just because you don't come out and take the Amir Garrett stance and throw gifts out and say or gifs, whatever it is, that I want to be the closer. I don't think that means that you're not suitable to be the closer or that you're not able and capable of being an elite closer.
Right.
It is what it is. Quickly, other than this, Reyes Maranta, who is coming back from shoulder surgery, doesn't look like his conditioning is where it needs to be. Jake McGee, someone that you're targeting late at all in any?
He appears to be someone who's, you know, rising right now in the not only in the ranks but in the hearts and minds of you know, fantasy save speculative guy. I don't know. Yeah. Nate, I took a bunch of Matt Whistler in round like 47, 48 in draft champions. I still think that, you know, it's funny because we always said, you've been capitalized and we were all hesitant about Neris and all this stuff. But now all of a sudden, Jake McGee, it's like Gabe Kapler proof.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. You know, I wish him well. I hope he dominates. But, you know, like Nick Pollock said, I want all pitchers to be dope. Because, yeah, we all, you know, we're rooting for players to do well. We're not, you know, unless – some people who just really want to see them suffer an injury or something like that. But
there's people out there.
I don't know. I have to do more on Jake Gay. What's your thoughts
like
on
anything?
Him?
I think you hit the nail on the head with Kapler. Kapler's going to Kapler, and Tyler Rogers could have a handful of saves. Whistler, as you mentioned, could have a handful of saves.
Right.
Maranta. And McGee, I don't know if I buy last year. He threw like 95% of his pitches were fastballs, and he had a 40% strikeout rate, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen again, but I guess it doesn't have to happen if you're getting opportunities. Rolls over ratio sometimes. I pretty much avoid that. In our tag team, the last round, we took Reyes Maranta pre him being out of shape and everything, just as a speculative last round, who knows what, but he's droppable most likely. In St. Louis here, you touched on Jordan Hicks. Jordan Hicks, I'm a fan of. You and I just drafted him together. You didn't know you're now part of a tag team league with me. Thanks a lot. Congratulations. You're now part of the TGFBI team of mine. Everybody in my league.
It's the TGFBI is fun, and this – I just like finally popped on to, you know, Smata's sheet.
Shout out to Smata, by the way.
God bless, man.
That is the most impressive thing I've ever seen.
Right. And he's got, I know there's people from Fantasy and Fantasy Benefits helping him. You know, he mentioned some people that are helping him input things, but just the whole layout of the sheet, I was just like, wow, this is just fascinating. This is pretty cool. Like, updated overall projections, you know, as it's happening, and you know, you're seeing like where guys go. I was just watching the board and I see like Jeff McNeil 36 pop up, and I was like, wow. And I love McNeil. I'm aggressive with my Jeff McNeil takes, and I saw that and I was like, oh, I hope he doesn't go that early in my league, you know. But yeah. just to be able to see that is pretty. It's pretty awesome.
It really is. It's just incredible. And I mean, to do that for nothing, just because he wants to do it, is, I think that borders kind of crazy, but at the same time, the most amazing, generous. I'm going to go generosity over craziness because I don't like people names. Yeah. I don't have to. And I love them for doing so.
Right. No. And obviously, you know, for me, something like that seems so overwhelming because I'm like a spreadsheet spaz. Oh. So like when I see that, I'm like, this must be taking him the world to do. But I know, you know, when you're that efficient and fluent on such software, like, you know, they're like, no, it's actually not that bad. You know, I know people who are whizzes on spreadsheets and that's what they use. No, it's just simple. It's just this and this. So to me, where it seems like, wow, does he have 80 people working for him? You know,
exactly.
It's overwhelming in my eyes, but he does an awesome job at it.
Well, look at the job you can do with the BAB system and incorporating that. There's people that would plug that in and immediately see that and go, what the hell is this? This doesn't tell me how many home runs they're going to hit and how many more I need. This isn't right. I'm going to go to something a little bit. I write mine down for crying out loud. I have a piece of paper that keeps my running tabs of everything. It's probably the reason why I haven't won the overall yet. So maybe I should.
But there's something about writing it down. I don't know what it is. Like even when I do notes for show notes, when I have ideas for, you know, stuff I want to like get into, for some reason, once I write it with my pencil on my pad, I remember it. Mm-hmm. But if I type it, I don't get that same initiation in my brain. It's pretty strange. I don't know, but I love writing stuff.
It gives me a sense of when I actually physically write the player's name, instead of putting it in, when I draft the guy, when I write Jordan Hicks, it feels more like he's on my team now. Wrote it, and I have 28 saves, and it's maybe optimistic. But
like you're writing in the player lineups, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Did you see on Twitter I think it's the White Sox coach when he fills out his scorecard? I don't know if that's trend. If that was just something I saw, that I don't know if I saw your name, if you commented on that or not. But I'll send it to you. It is amazing. He does his own font and everything. What do they call that when you
calligraphy?
Yeah, he does like calligraphy, and he wrote in the player's name in like Korean, in like their actual. Yeah, it was crazy. I'll have to send it to you after this is over, so you can see what I'm talking about. Wow, yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. Let's get into a little bit of, you know, some of the questions that I have. You know, obviously we're relief pitching only, and one of the key things that we unfortunately have to do is. You have to draft closers. And I love it. I love my closers. We try to go in, and Aaron and I have talked about a closer stable, if you will. And like, you know, when you go in, when are you comfortable grabbing your first relief pitcher? How long do you wait? How many in the first 25? All these questions are going through your head. But if you have this ADP kind of Bible that you had to go off of, do you have like a stable that you would love to go into every draft and walk out of with these group of players?
Right now, yeah, there's a limited amount of closers I want. And so what I'm trying to do is get them where I think it fits my team build. And earlier in the season with the uncertainty of closer, I found myself landing more of wait, because there was still like, you know, teams that you didn't know if they were going to sign a free agent. So you had the team context. You also had player context, a lot of free agents, you know, all that, you know, wonderful stuff. I feel like it's the first thing I studied this year in my offseason prep. I did an early draft champions in November, and I know how I like to draft closers and wait and speculate. Here's another t-shirt, wait and speculate. But is that the same thing? Yeah, that's not the same thing. But anyway, so I know that's my strategy. So what I did this offseason was first thing I did was just looked at free agency, ARB eligible guys, and, you know, just so that allowed me to wait as long as I felt comfortable. And I grabbed, I pounced back in. I took advantage of the market inefficiency of the free agency closers. You know, I got some Brad Hand in round 18, Mark Melanson round 24 or 23. And, you know, even if he's in a loaded pen over there and might not be the only guy, just the ability to get 10 or 12 saves deep in a drafting hole like that, especially when you don't have to pay for it up top, you know, because there's so much volatility. Even as the offseason has gotten closer to spring training, I found myself just maybe eyeing the top guys a little more. It's funny how it's just pushed up to the top a little bit, I feel like, especially in fab leagues. I'm probably going to definitely target more closers than I normally do. Last year in the main event, I just had a horrible closer picks. You know, it was just bad process too in my eyes. Chapman had COVID and I still took him because I saw him doing 800-pound squats and I'm like, this guy's immune to everything. You know, and then Joe Jimenez, I took him in round 9, and that's just one of those things that can flush money down the toilet real quick. So those things haunt me, and so it's tough for me to go up high and pick a closer that high. So I like Hader, Edwin Diaz, Hendrick. Obviously, I think everyone does and would take them. When they could. In TGFBI, I got Hader at round and pick 66 and Diaz and pick 85. I double tap closers. Yeah, so I just went after it. I'm like, you know what? This haven't had a team build like this. I wanted to do this in that tag team draft. Me and Jenny Butler had this strategy coming into the tag team draft, and we talked through it. And Jeff and Fred Zinke, Jeff Zimmerman and Fred Zinke, they took Hader, and then on the way back, it was like, oh, and then I said, oh, well, because our plan was to take one in the 4th, and then on the comeback on the 5th, you know, still have to get to us. Obviously, we didn't think we would get, you know, Hendricks or Hader, the other guy we didn't pick, but we thought that we'd be able to get Diaz or Iglesias, and it just didn't happen that way, you know, and so definitely more willing to go up higher, I think, in a fab league than draft champion, but it's still such a tightrope that it takes a lot inside of me to really want to go that route because of how quickly it can go south with those arms. And when you're passing up on, you know, 650 plate appearance batters, you know, that, or, you know, if you, it depends how you do pitching, you know, how you do your starters, and maybe you can tap into pitching there. So it's all build relative, but I love, I love Hicks later. I think that's the guy in round 14, pick 198 right now in draft champion the last 3 weeks. That's the guy I'm really high on. And I think there's a firm cutoff after Hader, Hendricks, Diaz, Presley, Rosenthal, Chapman. I think those guys are locked in. Yep. Good, you know, good target for closer one. And if I get any one of those guys and tap back into Hicks around 14, that would kind of be like ideal in the hopes that it works, you know, obviously, because, obviously you could say that with every pick, but with closers, you know, if you're going to invest that much up top, I think, you know, it's really important that you pick the right guy. And but if not Hicks, then I'm waiting and I'm just going for guys like in ADP, like 320s right now. And Pagan, Neris, I still like their skills a ton. I mean, if you look at stats from 2019 to through 2020, and, you know, Neris is walk rate and strikeout rate is just not too different from Rosenthal's and, you know, Matt Barnes, guys who, you know, are 100 picks, 200 picks ahead of him. So it's just those picks that I think that if you can grab those closers and they might, you know, pop into because I don't think that Philly's rough right now. And I just don't think Bradley 100 or 80 picks higher than Neris really makes sense to me. You know, in that context, that, you know, because Bradley took 6 years to become a closer and then he was only one for a couple of months. So, you know, I know people like coaches, like the guys who've been doing it before. So, and Girardi, you know, that's the thing, right? With that, it's like if Neris can find it, he's going to be Joe Girardi's likes his guy, right? You know, he's tendency to he's always had good options to pick just the one guy. But, you know, it's still he seems like he would have that mentality. So that's like a long-winded answer of how I really am attacking closes this year.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's the unfortunate approach that we all have with closers is everything. Didn't Mike Tyson said everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yes.
And, you know, you look at round four, like you said, where Zinke and Jeff Zimmerman went Hendricks Hader in three and four. So you're after that. Let's say Hader doesn't go there and you have a choice. Are you still taking Real Muto?
No, because it's funny because we had planned for it was funny. We were like, okay, we're gonna for round three, we were targeting Merrifield. We were, you know, Jimenez was probably not gonna get to us, but we, you know, we'll talked about him and Tim Anderson, Darlin Marte, and when Robert was there, it wasn't a guy we talked about because we didn't think he was gonna get to us.
Right.
And it immediately became, we both kind of said to ourselves, oh, fuck going safe with Marte. Let's swing for the fences, you know. So we did it. And I'm glad we did because I love Robert this year. And then I wasn't expecting JT to be there. But given the fact that we were heavy on, hey, let's try to get one of these stud closers early, we definitely would have took Hader there. And probably gone the route that, again, Jeff and Fred did with a Contreras, Vasquez, and 9 and 10, because we definitely wanted two catchers that we could lean on. And if we didn't get JT, we were perfectly ready to pivot to that kind of, you know, double tap that Jeff Zimmerman and Fred Zinke. Crazy how they had, like, kinks. Like, we kind of had the same thought as they did on a couple of those picks. And even some guys at the end where I think we kind of interchanged a couple, like, oh, I can't believe we got him there. And we felt the same way on the wheel. So it's interesting how that lines up sometimes when you're just right next to, and it doesn't have to be the, like-minded players, right? It could just be a like-minded route that you're taking, you know, and,
right. And
you're just next to this person. And you're like, why are you here? You should be on the other side of the draft. But, that would have been a definite Hader for us at that spot.
And that just goes to, you know, it just goes along with what we're saying. It takes that one pivot, and all of a sudden, then now it's like, and I think Presley is in that second grouping, that second tier, if we want to separate the top four and then or three. We took Iglesias there, who is we have no problem. I mean, with our strategy, we want to leave with one of those guys we're talking about. I'm high on Presley. Aaron's not as big on Presley. And when you have a tag team approach, you need to be cohesive in, you know, who you're going to land on. So that's what, I won't say it forced our hand, but when Chapman was starting to get a little bit closer to us there, we started getting a little too excited thinking that was going to be the case, because I would have loved, you know, Chapman in the fifth, that would have been great. But, you know, go to the last pick of yours in that. And I want to say that, to me, I love these picks and really pitching. I know that everybody, when they listen, they talk about, they want us to talk about closers and everything. But Brent Suter has him, like Freddie Peralta, a few others. You talked about Emilio Pagan also a little bit earlier. Some of these guys, there's a chance that Suter on any given week, you could put in when you don't have that two start week out of, or Michaelis is lined up in a bad matchup, or, you know, Odorizzi doesn't have a team yet, and maybe you just need to fill him in. With the amount of innings that are going to have to be occupied, Suter could come in and pick up 4 to 5 innings in a week sometime with phenomenal ratios and really keep your ratios afloat. Is that kind of what you were thinking going in? Because it's definitely not an approach that you think he's going to have any closing opportunity with Devin Williams and Josh Hader there.
No, definitely not like closing opportunity, even though I will throw it out that, you know, it's amazing how we can be critical of people taking Randy Arozarena in the fourth or fifth round, right? And it's like, it's a short sample. These are the same people taking Devin Williams in the 10th round with 27 good innings. Yeah. Right, in 2019, he got ripped. Right, he's 27 innings. It took him to be a darling. It's just, yeah. I don't know, those small, like that small sample, because you never, I don't know, that's wild, especially with no clear path to saves, and maybe not ever any clear path to saves. But yeah, so Brent Suter is just a guy I've liked ever since he was starting in 2017 for the Brewers. He always performed well with, you know, his FIP ratio and his ex-FIP, and, you know, he's just a guy, like high ground ball guy. And the last couple of appearances, actually the last 5-6 weeks, he just was really good inside the zone with like a spin efficiency on his fastball. And yeah, it's a context thing too. We already know the Brewers said they're coming out and they said we're only adding 100 innings. So while everyone's rushing to take Freddie Peralta at 330, you know, I don't see a huge difference in getting a guy who's been stretched out to start 2 years back to back and no problem filling in with, you know, a spot start and, like you said, 2 or 3 innings here and there. And I think they're going to want the innings up front. I think they're going to want to help their starters in the beginning of the year more than anything, especially now Woodruff might be a little banged up. So now you start to see, all right, so maybe these guys are going 3 or 4 innings, 5 innings, you know, max 6 innings, you know, maybe 6. Now you're seeing Brent Suter come in, piggybacking some wins now maybe. So, and gobbling up some relief innings, and I'm all about that. I think that's definitely a spot that you can, you know, get on this year and trying to find those bridge guys. When it works, you know, it could be beautiful, like Ryan Yarbrough-esque possibly. Right. But I don't think he'll pitch that much, like that length coming in early, like Yarbrough was doing 5 or 6 from the second. But I love it. I mean, he's a good shot for us. We were like, it was one of those, we looked at the schedule a little bit too, and we're like, maybe he's got the chance to come in and steal some wins. You know, we can get a couple wins, a couple good. And also too, it was a pick too, sorry to make this answer really long, but our last couple of picks in the back end for pitchers weren't guys that we felt comfortable rolling out week one, but we also felt comfortable, like, because we had Odorizzi not signed. We took high upside in Matthew Boyd. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to start him right off the bat, but we kind of just want to say, all right, well, if it looks like he's back, you know, I don't want to kill the ratios right off the bat. Even though it's kind of, you know, you can dig out of an early ratio hole, I guess, if it's just the first start of the week, but still, like, you'd rather be cautious maybe. So I think that just gives us the ability to throw him in there and, you know, not get a blow up start to start the year.
Yeah, I think we're going to find, I think as the draft season goes on, and it's pretty hot and heavy right now, but I think some of those people like you're talking about, so I think TJ Antone is another one that might start getting more. He's had a couple really, so I guess today he looked really good in his outing, or was it yesterday? Either way. And he's another one of those bridge guys that I don't know what your take on Michael Lorenzen being the fifth starter there is. I know that if we have an opinion that's not anything short of saying he's going to be amazing, we'll get yelled at by the guys over mostly Michael.
But, Simeone
yes, he will not be thrilled.
And it's so funny too, like when you're in a draft with Mike and, you know, everyone's like, we're in the battle of the pods, and like, you can't take Lorenzen. And it's like, nope, I forgot. I think it was Matty Wood. He took Lorenzen, and we're like, you can't take him in front of Michael, you know, Michael Simeone. You have to let him have. It's so funny. But yeah, I don't know what to make of Lorenzen. It was funny because I sent Mike a screenshot in that early DC I told you about in November. I took him in like the 44th round, 43rd round. And he was something that, again, I was doing some deep diving at the time, and I was looking at relief innings, starting innings, and he kind of popped up on both. So I was looking at it, and I went to Alex Chamberlain's leaderboard, and I did some filters with him, and I said, this is interesting, you know. And then I got the forecaster, and they kind of had a little, you know, rub about him. And then it was interesting when he came out and said that he was all about it, and me and Mike were talking at the time, and he's like, he's my guy. Lorenzen's the guy. And I sent him a picture of my team, and I'm like, I took him a couple of weeks ago. I hope he's the guy. And he's like, that's great. And then all of a sudden, you know, he went to like high up in the ADP, you know, and I haven't had him since, because every time I'm ready to take him, someone else takes him a little higher than I anticipated it. So
that Cincinnati team, they have so many intriguing aspects that I like. That's weird because he's not my guy, but Jose De Leon is a person who I have since winter ball. I keep thinking, here's a person who's going to come in the second half with a job, and he's gonna blow people away. And right. I screwed up in the fact, well, I didn't screw. Here's the story. I started following all of his games and paying attention to see what he's doing. And I retweet and comment something about one of his games where he pitched like, I think he gave up two hits and struck out like seven. And I was like, wow, what a good outing. I wonder how his fastball was looking. And I get a response from Jose De Leon saying, sitting at 96 with good movement. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's awesome. So then I just commented back and forth with him. I was like, man, you know, here, hopefully you have a good chance. You know, you get a chance to, you know, stretch it out a little bit, get a chance to come back and, you know, prove what you have, you know, your draft upside. Granted, I'm a Cardinals fan, don't want to see it. So on and so forth. Blah, blah, blah. By the way, we have this show that we talk about relief pitching. Would love to hear your story if you want to come on and talk. And he's like, Eels, yeah, you know what? I'll run that by. And I'm like, all right. I was like, well, here we go. And this was almost within a day of Michael Lorenzen coming on their show. I was like, holy shit. I was like, this would be great. 5 minutes later, he responds. He goes, oh, by the way, this is his dad. I need to talk to him. And I'm like, oh, hell, I've been talking to this guy the whole time, thinking it was Jose De Leon. It's been his dad the whole time. No wonder he's Skyping him up. He's like, yeah, he's talking about this great movement and how good the arm looks and feels great. And I'm like, this is great inside information. Hell no, it's his biggest cheerleader possible. It's his dad. But either way, he's looked good. He got the ball spring training opening day for him. So watch Jose De Leon in the 50th round if you do another DC. Just pay, maybe so.
That's some story, Nate.
Yeah,
dad, you were talking with dad.
Wow. But, Rob, I think that's about it, buddy. I know we could probably keep talking for another hour or so, but I know it's already probably 10:30 on the East Coast there. I don't want to keep you all night, but I do want you to, tell everybody where they can find all your work and what you're getting into.
Yeah. So, you can find me on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter. I'm the host of the Pull Hitter podcast. I have a page for that on Twitter as well. It's at Pull Hitter Pod. And yeah, so you hit me up on there. If you're a fan of the show, if you like what you're listening to, I'm telling people to DM me. And, you know, I haven't gotten your address yet, Nate, because I got to send you out some swag.
Oh, I'll give it to you. Absolutely. Yes,
I need your address. So that's what I've been doing right now. Everyone who's been kind enough to leave a rating or review or just reached out to me and tell me that they like the show. I'm sending out some stickers and some fridge magnets just to show my gratitude for, you know, supporting me. And yeah, I'm just getting involved right now. Obviously, we're in TGFBI, which is, you know, pretty fascinating. Awesome drafting with a whole bunch of, you know, new people that some of them are faces I know, but some of them I haven't known. And it's cool. So you get involved with a league, you start looking at reading some other people's content, listening to their podcasts, like the podcast bracket. You know, it's cool. It's just like constantly, you know, branching out and meeting more people and listening and reading more things. And even though it's a tough time right now to try to consume extra things because it's full-blown draft season. And getting involved with some main events in New York. And that's it, Nate. I really appreciate you having me, man. It's awesome getting to talk to you. It's a shame Aaron can't be here, but I know he's got better things happening in his life right now than podcasting. So.
Yeah.
God bless him. And hopefully we'll do this again. Maybe we should talk a couple weeks or a month into the season, right? And do a closers that we missed or hit on or something like that. Yeah. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Absolutely. No, cool. I think I think we could probably do one of those shows about every 2 days when the closer with the closer turnover that happens in this league. But yeah, I'm excited to follow along with all of your work. Of course, I'll listen into all your podcasts all the time. It's a who's who of anything. So again, if you're listening, please check out Rob. When your vote, the votes should be up by the time you're listening to this. I think that it'll be time to probably vote. So vote for the Pull Hitter podcast. I don't know who you're going to be facing, so I'm sorry, whoever that is. But
Prospects won.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Who took down RotoWire? So
that was yeah, that's man. But
yeah. So
I'm playing favorites. All I know is I wish you the best of luck, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Nate. Appreciate it.
And if tune into fantasyandframes.com for all your relief pitching ranks. We updated up to top 50 and listen to Bob at the postgame show.
Postgame show is brought to you by Christ, I can't find it. The hell with it.